It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
What up, everybody?
Hey, it's good to have you here on Money for Lunch. You know, I've been talking for the last couple of weeks about setting goals, the importance of setting goals.
Bear with me a second.
I'll go do something real quick. So here we are. Now, first of all, I want to make this perfectly clear. You don't need a new year to set a goal, right? And I also want to talk about why most people fail at setting their goals. They don't make them big enough or clear enough. This is my opinion. This is what's worked for me. For example, save money for retirement. That is very vague. Right? I mean, I don't know what that means. How about I want to save an additional $100 a month for retirement? I want to add $10,000 this year to my retirement. That is very specific. Right? And that's what you need to do. And let me tell you, if you're already adding $10,000 a year to your retirement, that's not a goal. That's a habit. Congratulations. Keep it up. Now, if you're going to add an additional $10,000, that might stretch you, right? You may, your goal may be to downsize your house because maybe you're an empty nester so you can use your retirement. Well, man, that's a big goal. It's very specific. You're going to sell your house, get a smaller house, take the money, and put it into an investment. Dude or dudette, you're the bomb. Speaking of money and speaking of retirement, my first guest, Al Salcedo. Al Salcedo is president and owner of CKS Summit Group, founded in 1996. Al's focus and objective is to help ensure his clients are able to enjoy their lifestyle beyond the workplace and into their retirement years. He educates and enables them to come to understand for themselves the financial path they should follow. He has spent 20 years helping clients protect and preserve their assets. Al Salcedo, welcome to Money for Lunch. Or I should say, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me again here, Bert.
You bet. All right, so let's talk about
Happy New Year.
You know, oh, absolutely, Happy New Year. So I wanted to talk about this. I wanted to see if there were some financial strategies or ideas to help reduce tax liability and see if you could talk about that.
Yeah, you know, at this time of the year, you know, so many people are getting ready now that they're scrambling to figure out different ways to possibly reduce their taxation and things like that. Some of the things that we kind of share with our clients here, and also, you know, not just for year end, but, you know, just as planning throughout the year, is, you know, we can always look at, we start with contributions to health savings accounts. You know, if you are paying for your own health insurance and you have a very high deductible, you know, the IRS allows you to deposit into a health savings account, and the contributions are tax deductible, and also the growth is tax deferred until you use it. So, again, for, you know, with so many things going on with health insurance and a lot of people are taking high deductibles, sometimes we forget that the health savings account can actually help you do that. So if you contribute to that between now and April 15th, you could be able to take a deduction on that also. You can also, there's a lot of people working at home or doing, what's that?
Al, hold on 1 second. I wanted to clarify this. So I wanted to make sure I understood this correctly. So you can take money. So let's just say you have a $5,000 deductible for your family on health insurance. You can open up a health savings account, put the $5,000 in there, and that's a deductible. That's a tax deduction.
Correct.
Wow.
And all they have to do is.
Go ahead.
But yeah, all they have to do is fill out form 8889 and document their contributions to the IRS. That's what they have to do.
That's kind of a cool idea. That is awesome. Okay. All right. Just wanted to clarify that. So you were saying something else. What else could they do?
Well, with home offices, I mean, so many people now are doing stuff from home and working from home. So you can claim your home office expenses if the space is used to meet with vendors, clients, customers, and you don't have an office with your employer. Okay? So if your home office must, you know, it has to exist in a designated area and be used exclusively for work purposes on an ongoing basis, but you can also, so you can deduct that portion of the of your home office, but also beware because this is also a red flag for the IRS. So make sure that you are using it. Make sure it's being used for what its intended purpose, and make sure that it's very well documented of what is being done and that you don't have an office at your employer's place. So that's really important. Also, along with that, is deducting the mileage for business purposes from when an employer isn't compensating you. So anytime that you're doing things for yourself, if you're self-employed, or for your job where you're not being compensated for, then if you maintain a log of that, you can deduct 57.5 cents per mile when filing this year through the standard mileage rate. So that's another option that can help you, you know, if you're in that, if you're self-employed, or if you're working for an employer where you're taking on the cost, then that's also something that you can also do to help you reduce some of your taxation. Always works pretty well. The other thing too, of course, we all know about, you know, maxing out the IRA. You know, everybody knows yeah. that if you you got up to April 15 to max out on your IRAs this year. So, you know, 5,500, if you're 50 and over, you can go to 6,500. The same thing with your 401Ks. You can max out on those also. Again, if you're over the age of 50, the catch-up rules will apply, and you can put an additional $1,000 into your 401K. So those are the simple things that you can kind of do right off the bat. One unique one, too, though, that maybe not help you for this year, but maybe for the following year, is for those people that are, that, you know, there are a lot of employers are investing in employees' education, okay? And so instead of them putting this money into your salary, companies can offer up to $5,200 to employees annually in tax-free education assistance. So by having your employer invest in education instead of your salary will also lower your take-home pay, your take-home income, and maybe keep you in a friendlier tax bracket. So that's something that some people don't think about, but it's something that can be actually negotiated with your employer to allow to allow you to reduce your total income.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that. You know, wanted to back up and talk about the, you know, the home business expense that you talked about and how you mentioned that it's a red flag. Look, bottom line is what you're trying to say is if you're using your home for real business, meeting clients, stuff like that, then it's not going to be an issue. But if you're trying to, you know, fake out the IRS, you know, they're pretty good about finding that stuff out. And it's not worth, you know, the few hundred dollars that you're going to save off your taxes to also have them audit you. And I don't know, Al, if you'll remember this couple, but there was a couple out of New York, the Hemsleys, who were, I can't remember if they were multi-millionaire, gazillionaires, or just billionaires. I can't remember, but they own like five or six of the of these really high-end hotels in New York. And the Hemsleys ended up going to prison because they were trying, you know, they ended up trying to not pay the IRS a couple of million dollars. Now, first of all, they could easily afford the couple of million dollars. As I mentioned, they're very wealthy. But, you know, they went about it the wrong way to save a couple of million dollars, and they both ended up going to prison. I'm using that as an extreme example, but it always boggles my mind how we as humans sometimes will do the weirdest things to save a few pennies or a few hundred dollars, or in this case, a few million dollars. But if we would have just left it alone, we would have saved ourselves all sorts of headache. And in the Hensley's case, they ended up going to jail. They spent $250,000 or $300,000 in legal bills. And it was just one of those things that was laughable because, again, they could easily afford the $2 million. But they got it in their head that that's what they wanted to do. So if you're going to take a deduction, make sure you qualify and just stay within the boundaries of the law. One of the things that I found out over the years, Al, is that the IRS code gives us plenty of deductions. They really do. In fact, you know, you mentioned one that I was not familiar with, which is this health savings deduction. There's deduction for college kids, for your college kids. There's deductions for saving for your college. There's deductions for homeowners and investors. And there's a plethora of deductions. You don't need to make stuff up.
Yeah, and you just brought up with investors. I mean, one of the big ones with investors is when calculating the cost basis after you sell your financial, any kind of assets, make sure that you add in all of the reinvested dividends, because that increases the cost basis and reduces your capital gain when you sell the investment. So that's another thing that a lot of people overlook too. So you're correct. There's many different things to take advantage of. But again, you do have to do them correctly and make sure that you have the backup for it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And this is where, you know, again, having a coach, if you will, a consultant, an expert in the area of taxes comes in handy, because they can look at your situation and see what you're missing and help you get the most. The IRS, the law allows you to take as many legal deductions as possible. And that's it. You are allowed to, you're allowed to pay the minimum that you're legally allowed to pay. They don't want you to overpay your taxes, but just pay whatever you're legally bound to do. This thing about the IRA, if I'm not mistaken, and again, correct me, Al, if I'm wrong here, and because I think with the IRA, aren't you allowed to have more than one? Because you can have one like for Bert Martinez, and then you can have one for Joelle Martinez, my spouse, and then I can have another one under my name. You know, is that correct, or is it just one person, one IRA per person? Period.
It's one IRA per person. You know, I mean, you can have a bunch of IRAs, but it's still the contribution you make one per year. So you're making your $5,500 contribution, or if you're 50 and over, you're making your $6,500 contribution. Doesn't matter if you put it in 10 different IRAs, it's still $5,500 or $6,500, depending on your age.
I got it.
Yeah,
that's
my clients, I said, you know, like you said, you have the government gives you every legal way of reducing. So your job is really to avoid paying taxes, not evade, because the difference between avoiding and evading is 10 years in the pen. So.
That's good. Yeah.
So it's our job to legally reduce our stuff, but we have to look at those kind of things. And the thing is really not to – so many people wait to the end of the year, and the thing is really to start in January and really figuring out how are you going to set yourself up tax-wise for the following year. Because every time, you know, when I see clients that are doing their taxes, you know, taxes are really a rear-view mirror. It's everything that happened in the past. So the thing that to really start doing, instead of trying to doing these last minute things to maybe reduce things and stuff like that, is to really take time. And I usually tell my clients to do this right after they file their taxes after April, to really take time to how are they going to plan out their tax year for the following year. And that takes talking to your financial advisor. That takes talking to your CPA. That takes talking to your tax attorney, if that's what you have. But being able to have somebody that coaches and combines all that stuff together so that you can start planning for ahead as opposed to always taking things and looking in the rear view mirror and then trying to fix it at the end of the year. Because a lot of this stuff is available if you already know what it is. So if you can get yourself educated, knowledge is power. So the more you can get yourself educated and understand what the possibilities are, it makes it a lot simpler for you to really put together a tax plan that can reduce your overall tax exposure. And that's something that I think that a lot of us overlook.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. And I think the key phrase there is tax plan. I think a lot of us are so reactive about our taxes. Just to be completely transparent, I didn't start planning taxation strategies until just a couple of years ago. Before then, it's just come January, I start putting all my documents together and I just send them over to my tax preparer and go from there. But you're right. When you start planning your taxes, you sit down with a tax expert and they start looking at, here are the things that you can do. First of all, it makes everything much easier at the end of the year, but also the benefits are so outstanding. I'm going to go back to your first strategy on the show today, which is if you're going to meet your health deductible, using a health savings plan and putting the money in there, boom, you just got a deduction for doing what you're going to do anyway. That is tax planning, and that's the difference.
Everybody confuses tax, actually doing your taxes as tax planning. That's not tax planning. That's just a reconciliation of the prior year. So planning is really looking at all the different things that you can take advantage of, or other things that are in your way, or simple adjustments as to how are you using money. Should that money that you're using, is it creating more dividends? Should that be in a tax deferred account? I mean, all types of things. And again, but that's also sitting down and looking forward as opposed to always being in a reconciliation mode.
Yeah, as you said, looking backwards. Also, I'll say it, we're out of time, but it's always good to have you on the show. I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of these tax strategies. As always, ladies and gentlemen, please check with your tax professional. If you want to find out more about Al Salcedo and CKS Summit Group, Al, what's your website?
SummitGP.com.
SummitGP.com, SummitGP.com. Al Salcedo, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care. Have a great day.
All righty. Good stuff there from Al Salcedo, president and owner of CKS Summit Group. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. My next guest, Michael Eastman, is the founding principal of Fellowship Financial Group in Altamont Springs, Florida. Michael Eastman has been involved in financial services for over 25 years. He's an active member of the American Institute of CPAs and has earned their personal financial specialist designation. He has a BBA in accounting from James Madison University, holds a Series 65 and 63 security license, as well as license in insurance and annuities. Michael Eastman, welcome to Money for Lunch.
It's great to be here, Bert. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, it's just, I think it's so timely to have you and some of my guests that we've been talking quite a bit about money. You know, it seems like it's a good time. There's a lot of things happening. Not only is it tax season, but you know, there's a lot of buzz about the market right now as people look to break 20,000. And so I think it's going to be good to have you here and talk about this, because really many people don't spend much time looking at their investment, and as a result, they're not aware at what's going on. And I want you to talk about this, because this is what happened to a lot of us back in, 2007, 2008, where by the time we looked up, we lost 50, 60, 70%.
Yeah, Bert, you're right on, and it's actually pretty shocking to me the number of people that I talk to that, you know, they have kind of a 30,000 foot view of how their investments may be allocated, but when we sit down and look at them, either they're way off or they're not, you know, they have a superficial understanding of the types of investments that they have. And in all reality, that can be very dangerous, as you just mentioned. You know, we experienced in 2007 the last major drop where the market, you know, we lost nearly 60% in the stock market. So that can be very painful, especially if you are a baby boomer, you're approaching, or you're in retirement.
Absolutely. It can be so scary. I mean, I was blown away. I was one of those individuals that lost a good chunk. And here's what's amazing is that you can play by the rules. You can do everything that you're supposed to do. And crap can still happen. And what I learned from it is that you have to have a contingency. You have to have a contingency program, because the reality is this is not the only correction we're going to have. It was like the first correction that we've had, or recession, whatever you want to call it, that may have hit us in a long time. But, you know, we're going to have another one. And if we're not prepared, you're going to experience losses again. I mean, that's it.
I think you're exactly right. And, you know, you mentioned, you had a great point. You know, you could play by the rules and then still get hammered. And the problem with that mindset is that who's writing the rules? You know, I like to help people understand that sometimes the rules are written in the textbook, right? They don't always apply to real life. And there are times in your life where you have to take a common sense departure from the textbook. And let me give you an example. I mean, if you were – let's imagine you just got your driver's license and you pull up to an intersection, the light's red, right? And your light turns green. And you know the textbook says, okay, the light is green, I can pull ahead. But you look out of the corner of your eye and you see this guy accelerating so he can blast through the intersection before you go. I mean, are you going to follow the textbook and blindly just move forward? No, you're going to wait. You're going to wait for that fool to blow through, and then you're going to go. And when it comes to investing, sometimes you do need to take that common sense departure from what the Wall Street textbook tells you. And in order to be safe, in order to make sure that you're going to have enough income in retirement, the time when you really need it.
Yeah, that's what we call it. That I think I love that analogy. You just have to be diligent. And, you know, I'm going to add my own analogy to that is, let's say that somebody is driving and you happen to be in the back seat of that car. And maybe the driver doesn't see the oncoming fool, but you do. It's your responsibility to stop the driver from moving forward, right? And my point being is that you can hire a professional, but sometimes professionals miss it.
That's so true, and especially if you understand the way that most professionals are trained. You know, financial advisors, and I happen to be a CPA and a financial advisor, so I fully support some of the topics you had with your previous guest, Al. He seems like he's a real bright guy, knows exactly what he's talking about. But, you know, it's so important that you understand that we're all trained the same way. We're all generally trained to follow the Wall Street mindset, the mantra that says, okay, just stay in the market. Everything's going to be okay. But again, this is why when we talk about people who don't understand how they have their investments allocated, then they have to look a little bit deeper. They really need to get deep and try to assess a couple of things. You know, first of all, you do have to assess your risk level. How much risk can you take? Not even so much are you willing, because what you're willing to take may be completely outside the realm of what you realistically can take in order to support your retirement goals. So those are all those are some critical things. And, you know, I'll share with you in a minute a couple of things that I do with my clients and the folks that come into my office to talk about how to make this happen.
Yeah, let's talk about this, because I think a lot of people would be interested, because I know that people listening right now saying, well, what questions do I ask? I mean, how do I know if I'm at risk or what my risk is?
Yeah, that's perfect. You know, the thing that I try to help people understand, Bert, is first thing you need to do is you need to identify your goals. You know, I found so many times that people come into my office and they haven't really thought much about their goals. They've done a good job of saving, but they haven't thought much about their goals for retirement. And consequently, I've found that if they haven't thought about their goals, they haven't really thought about the strategy that's necessary to support those goals. And so what ends up happening is when we look at their financial strategy, then what we find is that the strategy they've implored or put into place is actually in direct conflict with their goals. And what do I mean by that? I mean that most people are invested for growth when they should be invested for income. So, and I'm talking about retirees, people who are pre-retirees or baby boomers, or even if you're a conservative investor, it really doesn't matter what your age is. But if you're invested for growth when you should be invested for income, well, then you could be one of those folks that you mentioned a few minutes ago. When the market does drop, and look, 200 years worth of stock market history tells me that we're likely to see at least one more major correction. And that's going to affect you dramatically. So, you know, if you're investing for growth when you should be investing for income, it can be a very dangerous and cancerous financial strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and I'm glad that you brought that out. So it sounds to me like maybe somebody's first step is to find out what their allocation is. You know, where is their highest potential for risk, and see if that fits with their profile.
Yep.
Because maybe they need to be at 20% at risk, and they're unfortunately right now 80% at risk, or, you know, high risk, I should say, is what I'm trying to say. You know, and maybe their professional has got them in emerging stocks or emerging companies or high growth companies that are a lot riskier, and they need to be in more, you know, dividend type stocks that are not as risky, that are more conservative, but pay dividends. So I love this idea of verifying what your professional is doing with your money.
Yeah, and that's a critical point. It's just understanding, you know, what are your goals, then looking at your strategy or looking at your current allocation to say, well, is this allocation really in line with my goals, or is it in conflict? If it's in conflict, well, listen, lowering your risk by investing in investment vehicles that pay dividends, that pay interest, those types of things are generally considered to be less risky than common stocks and mutual funds and even bond funds. Most people have a misconception and as a result a false sense of security by investing in bond funds if they want to be conservative in their portfolio. All that really means is that if the stock market drops by, I don't know, pick a number, if the stock market drops by 40%, if you're in bond funds, that just means you're only going to lose 25 or 30%. But my question to that person is, are you investing to lose less, or are you investing to have gains? And that's a very important question as well.
Right. And that's interesting because, you know, there's always this talk that, you know, that when the market goes down, bonds are a better place to be in. And yes, 25% loss is better than a 40% loss, but that's still the wrong strategy.
It's definitely the wrong strategy, especially if you are having to take income out of your accounts. I mean, think about it. The last time I checked, when the stock market goes down, your bills don't stop coming in, right? You still have to pay bills. So that means if your bond funds are down in value, then even if they're down by 25%, you have to sell more shares when the market's down in order to get the same amount of income as you did when the market was up. So that's cannibalizing your principal, and that can be dramatically cancerous to an investor's retirement goals. It can be catastrophic at times.
Absolutely. And I love the idea of just telling your bills, listen, mortgage lender.
Market's down.
AT&T. I lost all this money in the market, so I can't pay my bills today, and I need
to wait
until the market back up again. And
yeah, it's kind of silly analogy, but the reality is that's unfortunately absolutely true. You can't do that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely true. So let me ask you this. When you're dealing with a client, somebody walks in your office, they're 50 or 60 years old, within that range, and they have zero to no retirement. Is there a possibility of catching up? I guess the answer is yes, depending on how much money they make. But for the average person, let's say making 100, 150 grand a year, catch up seems like it's going to be a very uphill battle because you really have to do some dramatic changes to try to catch up.
That's true. And you raise a good point. I mean, every single situation is going to be a little bit different. So sometimes the answer is, yeah, you can catch up. Other times it's, well, guess what? You're going to be working a little bit longer and we got to figure out how that's going to work for you. And I hate having that conversation with people because nobody wants to be in that situation. Nobody wants to be forced into a corner. So it's very prudent for people, whether you're 30, 50, or wherever you are, you've got to make sure that you're focusing on saving, you're focusing on preparation for retirement, because you know as well as I do, Bert, that time flies like that. I mean, my kids are a little bit older now, and I've watched them grow up. It's in what seems like about 15 minutes. And it's life. It just goes by.
You do not realize how fast life goes by. I distinctly remember yesterday playing with my toddler son, who is almost 30 today. So it goes by in the blink of an eye. And, it's one of those things, Michael, where I remember it seemed like it took forever to go from the age of 16 to 21. That took decade, right? I mean, it was just so slow. But to go from 21 to 30 was, I'll say, a couple of blinks, right? But to go from 30 to 50, that was like, that was like, you woke up one day and you were 50 and you're going, what the crap? Like, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
And so somebody listening to us right now and they're 19 or 20 or 25, they're thinking that, time is going slowly. That is going to reverse itself in a heartbeat, and all of a sudden time is going to speed up. It's interesting because here it was in November, and we were having a planning meeting for the first 3 months of 2017, and nothing makes time to me go faster than planning 4 or 5 months in advance of what you're going to be doing, and that just makes things seem to go even faster. Let me ask you this. If I walk in, let's say I'm dealing with a professional right now, I've heard this conversation that you and I are having, and I want to make sure that my allocation is correct. So what do? I call up my professional and say, hey, I just heard these guys on the radio, and I want to make sure, I want to review my risk, I want to review my portfolio, I want to review my asset allocation. What would be the correct phraseology there?
Yeah, first thing you have to do is you've got to make sure that you're dealing with the right type of financial advisor. As a financial advisor, we're not really required to ask you, are you likely to get rewarded for the risk that you're taking, for one thing? So you have to look at the investment's perspective. And so it's important that you're talking to the right advisor that can give you insight into different types of income-based investments, if that's appropriate for you. Because we can all do mutual funds and individual stocks, but to specialize in income in a way that can assist a client to reduce their risk, believe it or not, it's a niche business. And I find more and more that there are fewer guys that actually specialize in that. I feel very blessed that we went down this path because we have so much more to offer people. But you know, if depending on who your listeners are, I mean, if they want to contact my office just for a phone call or something, I'd be happy to direct them in their area of the country to an advisor that I am familiar with that has a similar philosophy, that at least can ask the right questions and make sure that if taking a common sense departure from the textbook is what it takes for you, that they'll get that sound advice. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. So they can reach you. Where's the best place that they can reach you at? What is your website?
Sure. They can go to my website, fellowshipfinancial.com. That's fellowshipfinancial.com. Or here in the Orlando area, our phone number is 407-949-5888.
I love it. Michael Eastman, we're out of time. It's been good to have you on the show. Looking forward to have you back again.
Thanks, Bert.
Good stuff there from Michael Eastman. You know, and it's so interesting to me, this conversation that we've had about risk allocation or asset allocation, kind of the same thing, really. So let me ask you, do you know where your money's at? Do you know what's at risk? What's going to happen when the market turns around or corrects here in the next 60 or 90 days? Where are you going to be? So if you have a bunch of money in the market, maybe it's time to sit down and find out what's at risk, what should not, you know, what different risk scenarios you should be looking at. Talk to your financial professional. Do not let your money stay there without you knowing what's going on. Remember, you were created.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.